Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paul here. Jor is back tomorrow. And I'm curious. Haven't heard a lot from Jordana. She really disconnected. And good for her. When you're on vacation, you should have the right, the freedom, not to answer emails, not to answer work-related phone calls. So I give her credit for focusing on what mattered, and that was disconnecting. If you want to disconnect 2 weeks from today, how about heading out to Target Field? Here's what you need to listen to. We're giving away, between now and 6 o'clock, one pair of Twins tickets for the home opener. You need to hear, listen for this. The crack of the bat, followed by the roar of the crowd. One more time, Susan Blanche. When you hear that, and not until, when you hear that, be caller number 4 and you win a couple of complimentary tickets to the Twins home opener. How cool is that? Plus, all day, you can register for a chance to win online at WCCORadio.com/contests. If you don't win this week, no worries. You have chances all next week with Henry Lake, too. You can get your tickets for the Twins in Cleveland opening day March 28th. At 3:10, the first 30,000 fans this year for the home opener receive a Twins puffer vest, courtesy of your local Northland Ford dealers. Get tickets, as always, at twinsbaseball.com/tickets. So be aware and listen for that. Not now, but sometime between now and 6 o'clock. Looking forward to giving away a couple of complimentary tickets. So a couple of things that caught my attention. Did you realize the United States is about to become the world's leader in exporting energy? Later this year, the U.S. forecast to pass Saudi Arabia in exports of oil, natural gas liquids, and petroleum. This according to energy research firm Rystad Energy. That hasn't happened since Saudi Arabia started selling oil overseas back in the 1950s. And of course, a lot of this is due to shale oil, to fracking, what's happening in the Bakken, what's happening in the Dakotas, all across the country. So, you know, part of me is excited about that. Yeah. All right. USA number one. And then I think, well, all right, what's the downside of fossil fuels? Well, is it warming up the atmosphere? Is it resulting in climate volatility and weather disruption? I'm seeing some weird things on the weather maps, and I've been talking about this for 20 years and trying to keep an open mind. By the way, annual tax filings compiled by the CIC show that the American Petroleum Institute, a trade association of the oil and natural gas industry, has worked for decades to sow doubt about the realities of a changing climate. They spent $663 million on PR and advertising, 48% of the total over a 10-year period. This compares to $98 million that renewable energy trade groups, including the Wind Energy Association and the Solar Energy Industry Association, spent during that same period. $663 million for fossil fuels, $98.4 million for renewable energy. And data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration shows that we are using less fossil fuel and emissions have come down since reaching a high in 2007. Coal, no longer the nation's primary source of electric power, although it is here in Minnesota, by a margin of 2-1 over renewables, and I think twice as much coal even as natural gas. In 2007, 72% of America's power supply was provided by fossil fuels. Renewable sources back in 07, only 7.5%. As of 2017, the percentage of power coming from fossil fuels stood at 62.3%. So we've gone from 72 down to 62 for fossil fuels for electricity generation. Renewables responsible for 16%, up from 7.5 12 years ago, driven by a jump in wind energy, which rose from less than 1% of the nation's power production in 07 to 6.3% in 2017. Solar power also saw its share grow 90 times higher than back in 2007, but still only responsible for 1.3% of power as of 2017. We've seen less progress with respect to transportation-based carbon emissions. Five states, Idaho, Vermont, Washington, South Dakota, and Oregon, and Washington, D.C., generate 70% or more of their power from renewable sources. Internationally, Denmark uses the most renewables, 52.4%. Ireland and Portugal come in at 25%. America's windiest states, led by those in the nation's midsection, Kansas, Iowa, and Oklahoma. The number one source of renewable power, though, two-thirds of global renewable electricity, hydropower, the power of moving water. Tim Reckmeyer is a buddy of mine. Sorry for that long, drawn-out preamble.
It's all good.
Tim works at Microsoft, and we've been talking about clean energy, renewable energy, and brainstorming market-friendly approaches. I know you're a Christian, so this is something that's important to you. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but why are you interested in this topic?
Yeah, so the summary is when you look at the evidence that's being put out by national climate associations and our national science academies and all of that, you know, they say that the burning of the fossil fuels is warming up our world. And then I blend that with my Christian faith, which talks about we need to take care of the least of those among us. And it's those that are already being impacted today and will very likely bear the brunt of it in the future. And that just slams up against my Christian faith. For me to sit back and say nothing is something that I can't and won't do, especially when I look at the only reason that this happens is simply because we've got a bunch of policies that allow market failures. And those market failures are the fact that we are all allowed, just by living our lives, to dump a bunch of pollution in the atmosphere that warms our world. And if that negative externality was taken care of, we would all do the right thing because we would be compelled via the cost to do so.
Because explain that one more time, because we have a free market,
yeah,
and that's one of the things that has helped to make this a great nation. But in the case of climate change, what, that free market just isn't working the way it does with other topics? Why does it break down? Because what, carbon is clear and odorless and tasteless. You can't see it. If carbon turned everything purple,
you'd know.
We would have dealt with this maybe 50 years ago, yeah, or 75 years ago, but it's very stealthy. And why haven't we dealt with this?
That's somebody for above a pay grade of mine to answer. I look at it, though, and I go, the biggest, you know, a lot of people will get wrapped around the axle of subsidies, and they don't want to subsidize this or subsidize the other thing. But the biggest subsidy of them all is being allowed to dump pollution in the atmosphere without a cost. Because then what happens is you turn around and all of us then socialize that cost. So an example would be, you know, who of the listeners would choose to go move to next to a coal-fired power plant? They likely would not want to do that because they inherently know that there's things coming out of that plant that would impact them and their health. Well, for me to sit here in this studio and be able to disassociate from that wouldn't be right, right? Another example would be if you look at the map of the Twin Cities right now, it's rush hour traffic and there's all the pollution that comes from the back of tailpipes. Well, that's being socialized across all of us in the form of health. Kids that may have asthma and whatnot are suffering from that as well. And so that hidden cost, or what an economist would call a negative externality, any policy that will take care of that negative externality and allow the invisible hand of the market to do its magic, I'm all in with.
You said something interesting, something about a silver bullet.
Yeah. So I wrote a commentary not too long ago. So I live down in Prior Lake, and so the Southwest News Media newspapers have been gracious enough to pick up some of my commentaries that I write. And one of them I wrote was, you know, what is the silver bullet of policy that will unlock the silver buckshot of innovation? And I would venture that a lot of people enjoy innovation. You mentioned and touched on the fact that we're going to be the largest supplier of energy to the world, and that is due to the innovation that has happened in that space. It does come with side effects, as you talked about. So if we were to figure out a national policy, or until the national policy gets established, a local state policy that would be that silver bullet that would unlock all the silver buckshot of innovation, I think it would, as you alluded to earlier, it's going to lead to more mobility, more freedom, more energy. We're going to have so much energy we're going to export around the world. And from what I understand, it's a multi-trillion dollar opportunity. And I, quite frankly, being a proud American, want us to go capture a massive portion of that. Why should we let anybody else do it? And there's been some really good, solid ideas that have been coming out of economists and whatnot that we should unlock at a national level.
So there have been calls on the left, and some would say the far left, for a Green New Deal and basically mobilize the government, kind of a World War II kind of footing, a Manhattan Project for the 21st century. Does this require the heavy hand, the not-so-invisible hand of government to solve, or is there a way to lever government to lean on the markets to come up with the solutions? Do we need, you know, an EPA that's 10 times bigger, or do we need 20 more Teslas?
So I'll say this about the Green New Deal. I really don't know a whole lot about it. It's pretty aspirational. I'm happy to have them involved in the discussion because it's forcing a discussion that, as you know, is far overdue. And what it does then is it really focuses people that want to have market forces be a part of the solution to really grapple with what should those things be? What does it look like? And what is the answer? Because the youth of today are not going to tolerate us adults sitting on our hands doing nothing. And they're going to force the hand of something at some point. And so the question you have to ask yourself is, do we want these youth to just look at government as being the savior? Or am I going to, as a Republican or a conservative, am I going to bring forth some sort of a market policy that's going to achieve the results over time, right? And I think that that's one of the things that can be super scary for people to think about as we start talking about this. And it's like, wait a second, am I going to be able to drive my 4x4 tomorrow? Well, yeah. Governor Schwarzenegger, Arnold Schwarzenegger, at one point, he's like, I don't want to change what you drive. I just want to change what powers it. And that to me is a beautiful mindset to have, is that we're gonna be able to have everything that we want. It's just going to be what powers it that is going to change. And it's going to happen over a period of 20 or 30 years. It's not going to happen overnight. We didn't end up with cell phones in our back pocket overnight that are more powerful than what launched men to the moon.
So you're telling me I don't have to pedal a rickshaw, shave my head, live in a yurt, become a vegetarian?
Unless you want to.
I have the freedom to.
You have the freedom to do that if you'd like to do it.
So, again, and a lot of Republicans, I think, are coming around and acknowledging that the climate is changing and that man probably has a significant role in this. And, you know, I've been arguing for a long time, let's debate policy.
Yep.
Let's not debate science.
There were three Republicans recently in the Capitol press: Greg Walden, Fred Upton, and John Shimkus. They're the leaders of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, and they said straight up, climate change is real, it's human-caused, and we need to be focused on solutions and be responsible for it.
Because it's just not sustainable, ignoring it and saying it's a liberal hoax. Because, I mean, young people really care about this,
yep.
And the GOP has to have some sort of a viable platform,
yep.
Right, to stay relevant 10, 20, 30 years into the future. To address this,
I would argue even 2, 4, 6 years into the future, because tomorrow there's a young woman by the name of Greta Thunberg, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. She was 15 years old in Sweden, and she decided she'd had enough. And so she camped out in front of the Swedish parliament, the government building, whatever it is, with a sign that she was skipping school. She was on strike for climate. And what has happened, that has turned into a significant movement across the world. And if I can get the numbers here, there's, you know, 1,000 different events across 100 different countries that is happening tomorrow. And, it boils down to this. Do you want to pretend that you don't have an answer, or do you want to get in the ring and debate various forms of policy? And you're going to end up having all sorts of ideas. You got the Green New Deal that is out there. You've got some moderates that are thinking something different, like a solution in which you put a price on carbon and then you rebate all of the revenue back to people. You've got another thing that former Representative Carlos Curbelo, similar thing, but then he took some of the cash and he did infrastructure with it. So there's an answer there somewhere. And it's we're in a democracy. It's going to get ugly and it'll get messy. But boy, having that policy argument, that's the beginning of the end. In terms of what needs to be done and looking at that 30-year horizon, and by 2050 have all of this energy that we just don't even know what to do with, and it's going to power every aspect of our lives, and it's going to be a great thing, and I'm hoping to be alive when that turn happens.
Going green may actually put more green back in your wallet, back in your purse. I'm intrigued with fee and dividend, and I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back with Tim Reckmeyer on CCO. Tim Reckmeyer, everybody likes the idea of getting a check. Talk to me. You have 2 minutes. Explain to me fee and dividend, which is something that may wind up being a compromise Republicans may be able to envision as a way to dial down carbon and let the market come up with solutions versus big government.
Yep. So I am in my spare time. I'm a volunteer with Citizens Climate Lobby. We have been arguing for a decade for this concept of a fee and dividend. It's now actually a bill, and it's been supported by multiple different Republicans. Francis Rooney is a Republican in Bonita Springs area of Florida, and he was an original co-sponsor of it. And essentially it works, and it's called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It's a mouthful. But essentially what you do is you put a price on carbon as far upstream as you possibly can, so at the wellhead where you pull oil out of the ground, where you pull coal out of the ground, and you put a price on it there to account for the negative externalities that I talked about earlier. Then you take
negative externality. That's a mouthful. What is that?
In summary, it's a hidden cost that is not included in the price of the thing that you buy. So our shirts have a greenhouse gas emission footprint. And there's a hidden cost associated with that I talked earlier about what we socialized, the asthma and climate change and some other things, that if we take care of that, then we'll make this innovation move that we need to. So you take that price, and the government doesn't keep a dime of it. It goes back to people in equal distributions. So your household gets the same as mine, gets the same as Jordana's. And then we get to decide how we spend it. Do we want to spend it on, knowing that there's this price signal into the market, we get to decide how we're going to spend it. Maybe we spend it on more insulation. Maybe we spend it on new windows. Maybe we spend it on whatever. It's up to us as to how we want to do it. And that fee on that carbon goes up steadily year over year over year over year. And then what you do to prevent leakage and people from leaving the country, you end up having a border adjustment. And with that border adjustment, it's going to keep businesses here, and it's also going to ensure that the rest of the world follows our lead. Now, the interesting part about this
is China can't take advantage of us or
China,
any other country.
India, Russia, Brazil, Venezuela, nobody can. And we would be in the driver's seat for energy innovation policy around the world. And the interesting part about this is that framework was talked about by some of the United States' most esteemed economists, so former Fed chairs. People have won the Nobel Prize for economists, former chairs of the Council of Economic Advisories, and then two of our former secretaries of the U.S. Department of Treasury, James Baker and George Shultz. And they penned an op-ed that basically said, here's the framework of a bipartisan deal that can be made. And currently today, it wasn't just the original co-signers of this statement of carbon dividends, but it is now got 3,500 economists around the United States, of which at last count 50-ish or more are from the state of Minnesota.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
And that's at econstatement.org.
But this needs to be done at a federal level. It's great that states are thinking creatively, but at the end of the day...
At the end of the day, the states can do everything that they want, but they can't, through the border adjustment and the World Trade Organization, force India, China, Brazil, Venezuela to follow our lead.
Senator Dave Osmak is chair of the Energy and Utilities Finance and Policy Committee at the state capitol, and he's going to join us here in a few minutes to talk policy and what can we do, what can we agree on here in Minnesota. We hear from him when we come back on CCO. Paul Douglas, I don't have the answer key. And here's a shocking revelation. Nobody has the answer key. It's only when you get smart people in a room that you have a prayer of coming up with a way forward. And you set off in a direction, and then you're flexible and you iterate and you zig and zag your way towards success. At least that's how it's been described to me. Senator Dave Osmak is a chair of the Energy and Utilities Finance and Policy Committee at the Minnesota Senate. And Dave, thank you for joining us today, sir.
Good afternoon. The ducks are happy today. They are getting plenty of rain, and it has done a wonderful thing for the snowpack, I'll tell you that.
I'm happy to see rain. I'm a little paranoid about the rain, though, with the flood threat. And, you know, I just hope we can avoid a worst-case scenario. But thank you for braving the traffic and the the crater-sized potholes to get over here at the studio.
Don't start on that.
Tim Recmeyer, a friend of mine who's been very active in the clean energy space. You listened to some of this maybe on the drive over. What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? What is your vision? Where do you think there's common ground with Democrats when it comes to clean energy?
Sure. And the first thing I say is don't call us climate deniers.
Nobody has.
We disagree.
I do not use that term.
There are others that do. Maybe not people in the room. But it isn't we are not denying that the climate changes. But I have very serious concerns on what is made by man and what is not made by man. Because if you remember back in the early 90s, we had a volcano blow up and we had a summer without a 90-degree temperature in Minnesota.
That was Pinatubo, I think.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to look at things not just from a perspective of what are we doing to the environment. And we have continued to improve the environment. It is undeniable since the 70s that we have made progress. Some people want more progress. I get that. Go to Los Angeles. The place is not littered with – you can actually breathe the air in Los Angeles now. For better or for worse, it's probably not as perfectly clean as Minnesota, and that's why I don't live in Los Angeles. But we are making progress. And I also point to one other thing. The numbers I've been looking at is that approximately 15% of the carbon that's spewed into the atmosphere every year is created from the confines of the United States. We have to keep that in mind. So it is good to continue to make a cleaner environment. From a biblical standpoint, from just a purely responsibility standpoint of us as human beings that we are passing this to the next generation. But when you look at the whole picture, if we do, let's say we are successful in Minnesota and we shut every carbon emitting facility down in Minnesota, you'll only have a half percentage point against what's going into the atmosphere. We need to continue to move and make progress. And wind energy, I will admit this on the air, and I'm sure there's some conservatives that are listening, they're going to be freaked out by this one. I have become a convert to wind energy because what has happened is this is one of those phases, this is one of those opportunities where subsidies are actually working correctly and the production subsidies on wind energy are coming off, which is exactly what a subsidy is supposed to do. It's supposed to get it off the ground. My problem with subsidies in government is normally you don't get rid of them. They stay there forever.
Sure.
But this one is going away.
It's a perpetual perk.
Right. And the energy that we are getting from our wind turbines is on par with what we can get for the same pricing through natural gas and fossil fuels. That is a good thing. And it's good for farmers, too, because farmers are able to get rent. And in low commodity price situations, which we're sort of experiencing now, that can help farmers stay afloat.
Mm-hmm.
Solar energy might be a little bit different, but we are making progress. But when you have to also keep in mind, too, that when we had that polar vortex, what happened to our wind turbines? At 22 degrees below zero, turbines have to shut off. We shut down all of our wind generation in Minnesota when we got really cold earlier this year. So you have to have carbon-based fuels someplace in the equation. It is undeniable. You have to have it just because they can ramp up and down very quickly. But we also have to have nuclear. So we need to talk, when we talk energy policy, about a global situation and using all of the resources that we have. Some people don't like nuclear. I have news for you. If you don't want carbon in the atmosphere, here's your best opportunity.
Right. I grew up just downwind of TMI during that near meltdown. Our bags were packed. We were ready to evacuate. My dad said, hey, we can move to California. And that's when it kind of sunk in. Oh, my God, this thing may blow. So I was very anti-nuclear for a long time because the trauma it created in my hometown in Pennsylvania. But I've kind of come around and I've come to the realization that, yeah, we do need nuclear. And there are new generations of cleaner, cheaper nuclear that could get us to where we need to be in terms of less carbon and providing that base load that we absolutely need.
Right. And what are we doing in Minnesota? Well, today, Senator Senjum was in front of my committee, and we were marking up his Clean Energy First bill. And this is a bill that will change a bit of the dynamic in Minnesota. It puts priority on clean energy resources, but it acknowledges the fact that we have to have fossil fuels as part of the mix. We're still marking the bill up. We have actually quite good bipartisan support for this. Senator Simonson is the lead from Duluth on my committee, and we had a number of his amendments that we put on. But we have to be cognizant of what the pricing turns into. We're trying what the Clean Energy First bill is doing is getting us away from this 20 by 30, 70 by 90, whatever, you know, putting all these goals in place mm-hmm. and much putting a much better structure in place for the Public Utilities Commission to be able to bring more renewables, which is good for the environment. Republicans don't debate that, but it brings it on with in a more consistent manner, which acknowledges that we have to have all these fuel sources to make Minnesota work. And that's going to be good for the future. I get very concerned about Governor Walz, some of the Governor Walz positions he's taking. He's relying upon a McKnight Foundation study that says by 2050, 70% of our fleet of vehicles is going to be electric. I think that's a very aggressive number, but it also says we're going to convert all of our homes away from natural gas into electric / home heat pumps. And that's going to be billions of dollars worth of private investment. So we have to try and work it out. I don't think we'll get it done this year, but we are making progress. I'm glad Senator Senjum, a Republican, is taking the lead. I'm the lead on the Senate. I'm a conservative Republican as far as you're going to ever find. But we acknowledge the fact that we have to make progress, and we can make good progress, but it's not going to be overnight, and it's going to take time.
Tim, do you have a question
for
the senator?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious. You talked about subsidies, and I'd agree with you. They should be temporary and whatnot. And I was on the radio riffing earlier about subsidy of being able to pollute our shared atmosphere. I'd be interested in your take on that. You know, is that a subsidy that should be eliminated? Because it's been permanent since the Industrial Revolution happened.
Well, I try not to pigeonhole myself too closely on what is a subsidy and what's not a subsidy. I acknowledge the fact that there are prices and costs to carbon going into the atmosphere, as you said earlier about kids with asthma, medical conditions that come out of this. I acknowledge that. But the fact of the matter is we're still going to have it, even under the most rosiest of circumstances. We had a testimony in front of us from the Mid-Continental Interconnect Service Organization, MISO, which is basically the big organization that deals with energy in our area. And they said as we move towards 40% renewables on the grid, we create transmission issues that are going to cost us billions of dollars more. Again, subsidies I try to stay away from. I'm not sure, and I didn't hear your whole conversation on it. I think that we are moving away from that, and I know that there are oil subsidies I'm told about, and I know that nuclear plants have huge subsidy. I understand that too, but we're going to have to pick what we want because otherwise we won't have anything.
So, and I guess my perspective would be, and I guess this could be my education. So Bob Inglis, I had spent some time with him. He's a former South Carolina congressman, and he and I were talking one time over a beverage, and he's just like, you know what, if we could go back and just get rid of all subsidies and make sure all the hidden costs are in and let the market just work its magic, like have faith and trust in that to happen. I understand there's a whole lot of back history that we're trying to work through, but as you were talking about, you know, we need to have this, we need to have that, I think, why are we cherry picking things? Why are we trying to decide, well, why not just set the level playing field, have the government be the cop on the beat, and let the markets decide which way it needs to go, how to keep the lights on, how to keep the turbine going on that once every 40-year, 40-below day that we had, which was – I don't ever want to go back there. I blame you, Paul, for that weather coming
yeah,
in. The Arizona
no,
boy and me
Lynch's
was not
fault.
Happy about that.
Senator, we've got 30 seconds.
Yeah.
How would you address that?
Well, what you're talking about, too, is going to a real free market, which would be to decouple energy producers from the energy transmission devices and the people that put up lines and do those kind of things. That would be the true free market to be able that they would have to price out their energy based upon their costs. Unfortunately, that's not the way we use a regulated monopoly within Minnesota with our energy producers. And I don't like to say that's the way it is, but that's the way we have it. It is a huge undertaking to make a change, but something that has been discussed at the Capitol.
Cool.
All right, Senator Osmak, thank you for coming over. Look at this; we're debating policy. Holy cow.
We didn't have the Green New Deal policy person at the left edge of the spectrum here, so maybe next time.
Well, we're happy to have that voice on the air, too. We want to hear from all the voices, all the people, as many as we can jam in, and let listeners, who by and large are pretty wise, make their own decisions. Tim Ruckmeyer, thanks for coming down today to talk energy. Senator Osmak, thank you for showing up today, and Godspeed, pray for spring.
You bet. Thank you. Back to the Capitol. We have more committee work tonight. Yeah, it's first deadline, so it's everybody's busy day.
It never ends.
And I'm going to go dodge potholes on the way home.
All right. Paul here. Jordana's back tomorrow. Mike Max is here right now in Studio A talking Vikes. Hey, Maxie, how you doing?
Good. They just reintroduced Anthony Barr, Shamar Stevens, Stephen went away for a year, came back. They signed him as a free agent
because
they didn't get Sheldon Richardson. Anthony Barr gave him a discount, and they signed him. The problem is now the money that they didn't know they'd get Barr. They got him at a good price. Now you don't have any more money to spend on offensive linemen, and you don't have a lot of good offensive linemen out there to sign. So my guess is Spielman's working hard, Rick Spielman, to get a trade or to do something. Even maybe trade a draft pick to get a veteran offensive lineman in there.
Do you know something we don't, Mikey?
My guess is Rick Spielman's trying hard.
You got inside information.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So the Gophers play Penn State tonight in basketball, right?
Dun, dun, dun.
Penn State, you've got a background with.
Yeah, and I love the Gophers, too. I
get that.
I struggle with this. I really do.
But they always talk about a college town, right? And they say the Gophers don't draw well in football because it's not a college town, all right? That's a theory out there. Penn State sells out because it's a college town. Well, in basketball, Penn State can't draw flies on the 4th of July, you know, in terms of an audience.
Because they're competing with football, and football drowns everything else out.
But why would they be competing with football in the wintertime when there's nothing else going on? Why wouldn't they fill that big arena up?
Pennsylvania's
if it's a college town.
They watch old VCR tapes of old Penn State football games. That's it. They're addicted to football. I don't know. Basketball not as big a deal in Pennsylvania, except for Philly and Pittsburgh.
Correct. But when they say, well, there's nothing else going on in that town, that's why people get excited about the football games, go to the football games. Well, why wouldn't a fraction of them get excited about the basketball then if there's nothing going on in that town? That's what they say about a college town, not just Penn State, but a college town.
I wish I had the answer to that, Mike Max.
I'm going to let you give that some thought, Ken.
Hey, Phil Mickelson broke.
Yeah.
He rented our place when we were out at Bear Path. He broke our toilet seat in the powder room.
Are you serious?
I swear to God, as my witness, he broke our toilet seat. And now he's coming back. I want a chance to confront him.
Yes.
Just to ask him how you break a toilet
yes.
seat. He cracked it. He's coming back, right?
Yeah. Was that with a driver or a wedge or don't you?
I suspect he just put
he was
cleaning his clubs and he set them on the commode. But to this day, yeah, Phil Mickelson, he broke our toilet seat.
That's pretty cool he stayed there, though.
Yeah, and yeah, great guy and
yeah,
whatever.
It's a great get, and Hollis Kavner is the master at this. Now, you watch this. Hollis Kavner runs the tournament. I'll guarantee you he's got four or five guys that are in his back pocket. Yesterday's Phil. Now, when things start to wane a little bit, here comes the next one. Then the next one. Yeah, we got to go.
Mikey Max.
Big show tonight at 6:30, taking you up to the Timberwolves.
You are the best. Governor Tim Walz next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day.
Oh, and you want the proof?
Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.